I'll leave the floor to you.
Okay, thank you very much. So this is work that I did with my advisor, Jens Stark, and along with Sunja Ingo and Luca. I'm going to start by a short introduction into what an exclusion curve is, and in particular discuss exclusion curves for higher redshift galaxies, how we measure them, and why we measure them. Then I'm going to describe the method that I actually employ, which is using lens devices, and I'll go over some previous results. Then I'll show you the survey that we did and the results from our survey. And then I'll finish with discussing some future prospects. So an extinction curve measures the difference in the light emitted and the light actually observed by the observer. And the absorption is caused by interstellar dust. And traditionally, you measure these extinction curves by comparing two stars of the same spectral type. And this is what makes the approach rather limited, as you can only go to distances where you can resolve individual stars.
Okay. Thank you. So, there we are. The galactic extinction curve is very well measured and is described by a one parameter empirically determined law, which was determined by Cardelli, Clayton, and Matthews. And the parameter RV is the ratio of total to selective extinction in the V-band, and its mean value in the galaxy is 3.1, which is given by the blue curve here, but the values range from as high as 1.8 and up to almost 6 in the most extreme cases. The most characteristic feature of the galactic extinction curve is the bond at approximately 2,200 angstrom. Its origin is not perfectly well understood, but it's believed to be due to graphite.
What?
Graphite. So the method has been used to study other close-by galaxies. M31 also has an average galactic extinction law, but the two Magellanic clouds have somewhat different behavior, with the large Magellanic cloud, shown in blue here, having a smaller bump and a steeper rise into the UV, and the small Magellanic cloud, which is given by the black curve, it shows no bump and is well fitted by a law which is inverse, linear and inverse wavelength. So moving on to higher redshift galaxies, why do we want to measure them at all? From the examples that I've shown you, we can see that both the type and actually also the amount of extinction can vary greatly depending on the galaxies and the lines of sight. However, when we're analyzing data from more distant objects, their extinction properties are usually not well understood, so the mean galactic extinction law is often applied, but there's no guarantee for this being correct, and if it is not correct, it can introduce systematics into your result. So we want to basically be able to avoid these systematics. Another reason for studying this is simply to study the dust itself if you are interested in dust. But from our approach, the main reason is we want to get rid of this effect. We also expect dust and therefore extinction to vary with different environments and also possibly to vary with redshift. So we wish to study it, and we can't use our traditional methods, so how do we go about it? There are several methods that are used, each that has its strengths and weaknesses. One is studying extinction curves with quasars, not lensed ones, but just regular ones. And the notion is that you take a composite spectra of reddened quasars and you compare it to a composite spectra of non-reddened quasars. You choose the reddened quasars as damped Lyman alpha systems or absorbers or having galaxies in the foreground. And the groups that have done this have found very varying results. For the damped Lyman alpha absorbers, The initial study by Pei in 1992 found signs of extinction, whereas Murphy and Lisk and Ellison found no extinction using a larger sample. For the MG2 absorbers, Malhotra found galactic type extinction, whereas York found SMC type of extinction. The plot here is from York, and it shows the non-absorber sample and the absorber sample here. And the curves here are the three extinction laws. The blue line is basically no extinction, and that obviously doesn't fit the data very well. Then the green curve here is the galactic type of extinction, and the red curve is the SMC, which fits his data best. They don't know for sure, but that's the assumption. Usman studied the foreground galaxies, and she found galactic type extinction, but only one system actually survived all the cuts they made. So it's not a composite spectra, it's just a single quasar that she's looking at.
What kind of extinction
do the supernovae people use? We're getting to that, yes. I actually think it might be... No, it's not next, it's the slide after this one. So you can also get extinction curves by studying the spectral energy distribution of gamma ray bursts, and they seem to favor a small Magellanic cloud type of extinction. All the black dots here correspond to SMC. But there's one system that shows Milky Way type of dust, and the for lower redshifts, they become very hard to distinguish. And I think this is running out of batteries or something, if anybody has. There's a stick. I also actually have my own private little magic device, so I'll just use my own private magic device. So this is from a paper by Kan, and he actually also claims that they can see evolution with redshift with more distant gamma ray bursts having less extinction. I'm not quite sure if this is very statistically significant, but that's the claim they make. If they're very strongly extinguished, yes, that can also be the case.
So excuse me, what are you plotting here? You're plotting the extinction intervening kind of clouds or something like that?
It's the interstellar medium, so it's the dust in the galaxy.
Of the host,
yeah.
Okay.
This is not the galactic extinction, that has already been extracted. So it's the dust extinction in the host galaxy of the gamma ray bursts. Sorry?
And the IGM has been corrected.
Yes.
Okay, so...
Is the galactic extinction really known that well?
Yes, it's been studied along almost any line of sight, and it's very, very well documented. And it always follows this parametric law in the optical wave bands. There's some... Yes. No. There's different values for the different bits of skies, but they all follow the same parametric curve, but there's a different RV and a different total amount, AV. In the extinction, but it's very well documented, so you can just look up in a catalog. So extinction curves from supernovae, they usually find that they are consistent with galactic extinction, and as far as I understand, that is the extinction they always apply. They apply galactic extinction either with RV of 3.1 or occasionally with lower RVs. There are some people, I think, now trying to see if it changes the results much if they use SMC type of extinction, but I don't know the results. When they try to study extinction curves from supernovae, as I say, they find that it's consistent with galactic type of extinction. However, they usually get lower RV values, which has led some people to suggest that supernovae 1A environments might be systematically different. One other possibility, as explained by Wang in a recent paper, is that the extinction estimates for supernovae might be affected by circumstellar dust. And And the plot here is from his paper, and it shows the extinction due to circumstellar dust and the extinction due to interstellar dust. And you see here, this is the R lambda as a function of wavelength for both circumstellar, interstellar dust and the circumstellar dust in the solid line. And you see that RV, which would be at around 550, has a lower value for the circumstellar dust than the RV for the interstellar dust. However, I don't think this is an accepted explanation in the supernova community, but it is an idea to explain why they get systematically different results. So moving on to my topic, which is extinction curves from lens quasars. The idea of the method is that the quasar images act as standard candles shining through different parts of the galaxy, and ideally what you want is one image to be far away and one to go through the dusty parts of the galaxies. If you have more than a doubly imaged quasar, then you have the possibility of probing more than one line of sight for each galaxy. This method sounds simple enough, and it was first proposed by Nadao in 1991, but it of course has many issues that you need to deal with, and one of the main issues is that it's hard to verify that one of the images is not extinguished as well. So in practice what you're measuring is the differential extinction curve. So if you take a differential extinction curve of the galactic type, then you actually still get an extinction curve which follows the galactic function, but it has an effective RV, which is a function of the RVs along the two lines of sight, along with the extinction along the two lines of sight. Theoretically, this value can go from minus infinity to plus infinity. So if you see a lensing survey that would give you an RV of minus 100, it does not mean that the dust in that galaxy is necessarily very odd. It probably just means that you're observing an effective extinction curve. So keep this in mind if you see very odd values coming from this method. So on the plot here, I plot how strong this effect is for maybe more reasonable values of the RVs and the RBs. I basically allow the ratio to range from roughly 0 to 3, which corresponds to taking the most extreme range we've seen in the Milky Way, that is going from 2 to 6. And you see that if you, for instance, take the most extreme case here of 3, and you want 10% accuracy in your RV estimate, then you need the ratio of EA over EB to be roughly 0.05. So this plot basically shows you how strong this ratio needs to be for a certain accuracy in your RV estimate. So I also wish to point out that it's not necessary, actually, that one of the images not be extinguished. What's important is that one image dominates the extinction of the other. And this is maybe a more visual image. It shows this effect for two redshifts at sat equal to 0 and sat equal to 0.8. That's the redshift of the lensing galaxy. And the black curve is the line that I actually wish to measure. The dotted line is the reference image, which we are assuming to be non-extinguished, and the line here in the middle is what you actually then get. And you see that here, where the E of the less extinguished image is 40% of the E of the more strongly extinguished image, it affects the extinction curve quite strongly. But if you go to the case here where it's only 10%, then already you're starting to see quite a good agreement. So this effect of the more weakly extinguished image is not too strong. The case here that I'm plotting has RV of 4 and 2, which are within the galactic range. So another issue that can be more troublesome is microlensing, which is the lensing of stars or compact objects in the lensing galaxy. It mainly affects the continuum part of the emission, and unfortunately its effects can look like extinction. So the way we have dealt with this is that if you take the data on a time scale that is smaller than that of the microlensing signal, then to first order, the effect of the microlensing should just shift the curves up or shift them down. We do a second order correction to this as well, but this only really corrects the achromatic microlensing signal. But if you have chromatic microlensing, then you actually need to study the spectra of the quasars to separate the two effects.
How do you determine the timescale of the microlensing?
We don't determine the timescale of the microlensing. What we do is that we just try to take our data as quickly as possible. So the optical data were taken on the same night for each system, and the difference between the near for the infrared and the optical had a mean of 17 days. So time delays are another systematic that enters our equations, and it's because the travel path for the different images is different, therefore the intrinsic variations show up at different times. So ideally you should take the data with a time difference corresponding to the time delay, although this of course would make the microlensing problem bigger. So again, what we do is by taking the data simultaneously, then we reduce this to a shift in the overall extinction curve. So we're not changing the shape, we're simply shifting it up and down. And this is really the only realistic way of going about it, because measuring the time delays, as we all know here, is a very difficult problem. And therefore, it's not reasonable to use this method here. So, to show you some previous results, the pilot study was done by Falco in 1999. And so these three are taken from his paper, and they're very, very faint. This, however, he resent to me because there was a small error in the figure in the paper, so he gave me the correct one. But if I help you to read this, then he basically finds RV values ranging from, I think, 1.5 up to, there should be 7.2 here. He actually studied the extinction curves of 23 lensing galaxies, but he assumed a mean galactic extinction curve for all of them, because he didn't have data for all of them to actually parameterize the extinction curve itself. However, for these few systems, they had enough data, so they did the full extinction curve analysis and getting RV values of 1.5 to 7. But their data is combined from epochs spanning several years, and it's taken from different groups. So it's in no way a well-selected data sample. They basically just took everything they could find. So it's a pilot study and a very interesting paper, at least if you're interested in this field. This is one of the nicest detections of a detection bump at high redshifts. It's from a lens at a redshift of 0.8. And as I say, it has a very strong detection of the galactic bump at 2,200 angstrom. And the best fit to the curve has an RV value of 2.1 plus minus 0.9. So it's lower than the galaxy value, very similar to the values you get from supernova studies, but still consistent with the galaxy.
So the error bars here, they include sort of uncertainties in the time delay or in, you know, microlensing and as you have mentioned?
I'm not sure how they estimated their error bars, but I know that most of their data points here, the dense ones, come from studying the spectra and dividing it into bins, and the open boxes, I think, are broadband photometry, and I can't remember where the triangles came from, but they are combining several kinds of data as well. Wuknes studied HE0512, which is at a redshift of 0.93. They found that a galactic extinction curve is marginally preferred, but with very unphysical RV value of minus 2, at least unphysical in the way that we have never seen this in the galaxy. I'll come back to this system because it is actually in our survey and we find very different results. We, however, probe a different range from them, so we basically probe the range from here and all the way down. But as I say, we'll come back to this system. Then Munoz studied two systems, finding RV values of 2.5 and 12. And finally, Gokocea found RV of 4.4, although for a best fit, he actually had to split the data into two groups here, and the solid curves here and here, whereas the dotted line is the single curve fit with an RV of 4.4. This brings us to our VLT survey. So the notion was to take a uniform sample and try to apply the same data taking methods and data analysis to it to try to be able to build up a sample where you might be able to do some sort of a statistics on it. The sample is not very large. It consists of 10 systems, 5 doubles and 5 quads. They were chosen in such a way that they were observable from the VLT, that they had image separation large enough so that we could actually distinguish the components. And we insisted on the redshift for both the lens and the quasar to be known to reduce the number of unknowns in the fittings. This left us with these 10 systems at the time of the survey, which have a redshift range from 0 to 1. For the observers, the data were taken in excellent seeing conditions. This plot here shows the seeing conditions, and I believe the mean is around 0.6. And as I said before, we have made an effort to minimize the time delay between the observations, with the optical observations being taken on the same night, and the mean delay between optical and infrared being 17 days. We also have a broad wavelength coverage from the optical into the infrared. So we do a first order correction for microlensing. What we do is, since microlensing should only affect the continuum, or affect the continuum most strongly, then we calculate the ratio of the emission in each band coming from the continuum versus from the total emission. And this, of course, differs for the different quasars as the bands get shifted. And then we introduce a correction due to microlensing, which is proportional to this ratio. We parameterize it by a constant we call S, and S is roughly the same size as the microlensing signal would be. So if S is 0.2, it means that there was a magnitude change of roughly 0.2. We consider three types of extinction laws: the galactic extinction law, which we've discussed in detail, the linear small Magellanic type of extinction, which we then also expand to a power law with a free power index, just to see if that gives us anything interesting. The plot here shows you the three types of extinction. The red is the linear SMC, the blue is the galaxy, and the green is a power law with a power index 2. So, moving on to my results, I'll first show you some results from individual systems. I won't go through them all, but I'll show you some just to give you a feeling for how good or bad our results are. And starting with our favorite system, this has a very, very strong extinction. The AV is 2.4, and it has a very well-constrained RV of 2.1. It's a late-type galaxy at a redshift of 0.4. When we do a microlensing correction, we find a non-zero microlensing correction of 0.3, but it is still very, very small compared to the actual extinction. So we really believe that what we're seeing here is an extinction curve. We
must depend on how well we can predict the flux.
Yes, the absolute A of E does do that, but the E of B minus V doesn't. So if I would give you the E of B minus V, it would still be very, very high. It would be roughly 1. Yes, here we have the flux ratio from the radio, but as I said, it could still be shifted due to the effects that we were discussing. But another reason why we really believe that this is a very, very robust detection of an extinction curve is that we have measurements in the X-ray which confirm that one of the images is very extinguished and the other not. And this is a work in preparation by one of my colleagues at DARC. So hopefully that paper will come out this year or early next year. So this is our favorite system. To show you the other end of the spectrum, where we still get a detection. This is a very weak detection of an extinction curve, so we only get an AV which is marginally non-zero, like a two-sigma detection. And the RV is reasonable at 3.3, but has very high uncertainty. And due to the weakness of the detection and the large error bars, all the fits are equally good. So there's no way we can see whether one extinction is better than the other. Whereas for B1152, we actually found that the galactic type was better than the others. So this is the system that Wuknitz studied, and it's again a late-type galaxy at 0.9, and we find that a linear extinction gives the best fit. And this is probably strongly affected by this point here, which lands precisely where the bump should be, but shows no signs of a bump. If we do a galactic fit to our data, we get an RV of 1.7, which is obviously very different to their value of minus 2. It is still quite possible that these results are being affected by extinction along both lines of sight. We do not think that microlensing is affecting our results too much, because although Wuknitz did a combined microlensing and extinction survey, then they find that the effects of microlensing should basically drop off at wavelengths around here. So this point might be affected, but the points down here, according to their results, should not be affected by microlensing. They looked at emission lines and continuum. So it was a combined microlensing extinction effect. What they actually did is that they calculated the microlensing signal first and deducted it, and what they had left was their extinction signal.
But they do it on the emission line.
They do it by studying emission lines which should not be affected by microlensing. And
The emission lines might be differently affected by extinction, so that means when we think maybe wrong the breakdown itself.
Yes. What do you mean?
Well, I mean where the emission lines come from a different region around the breakdown.
Yes.
Continuum, I mean, so if there is a significant amount of absorption and dust associated with the drop line region, then you might expect
in the yes, I guess you might. I'm not sure if that is consistent with the quasar models. Does anybody know? Should the dust be different for the different emitting regions?
Is it differential? Is it different line of sight which have a slightly different amount of extinction coming from the quasar?
I think that the assumption here is usually that the host of the quasar should not be giving a very strong extinction. It should cancel out. It should be the same for the different lines of sight. So I don't think that would explain it. But it is possible that there is either microlensing playing with us here or extinction along both lines of sight. It might be interesting to try to somehow combine our data and see what that would give, but there is of course always the difficulty of deciding where they meet, because you can shift things up and down. We don't have any radio measurement here to constrain where we put our zero point. So this is a more distant system, but unfortunately, although we should have had a point here with our bands, then it was too faint to actually give us a detection. But we find here a very strong extinction, 0.9 for an early type galaxy, with an RV of 2.7. And as this is a quart, we can compare it to both the B and the C image, and we get very, very similar extinction properties. However, if you compare it to A1, A1 is also significantly extinguished, then you get the effective RV. And it's actually interesting because we also measure A1 with respect to B and C. And if I take, this actually gives the best fit to a power law, but if I take the RV from the galactic extinction curve, and calculate what the effective RV should be if I take A1 minus A2, then the calculated results agree with the measured result. So we are just really seeing the effective RV if we take A1 minus A2.
How well can you separate A1 and A2? Is it very close together?
Yes, they are well enough separated in almost all the bands, but it might be, I can't remember if the reason these points dropped out was because they couldn't be resolved anymore, or because it was they were too faint. This was, the deconvolution was actually done by Ingun Burud. No, I didn't actually do the deconvolution myself.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't realize you're devolving at all.
So they're deconvolved, yeah.
So why deconvolution not the aesthetic?
This you should really ask Ingun about, but they have a paper saying that it's a better approach. She actually did a study where she compared I think three different methods of doing this, and her claim was that the deconvolution was the best way to go. But this is not something I'm very familiar with, so.
A simple question. If we look at the Milky Way galaxy,
yes,
in different directions,
yes.
So in all directions, you can always just fit it by a so-called Milky Way type of extinction curve, or you have some fluctuations.
No, it's always the Milky Way extinction curve, but with different AV and different RV. So it's always that thing with a bump going up, but it can be slightly different. But it's always given by that parametric function. However, there have been some recent papers out saying that this does not imply for the UV, so that they actually found some different behavior for different lines of sight in the UV. So this is the last single system I'm going to show to you, and it's the most distant one at a redshift of 0.101. And it's become very faint, so the error bars have become somewhat larger. But we find that the best fit is marginally given by a power law, and with a power index of roughly 1.5 to 2, depending on whether we fix the intrinsic ratio with radio measurements or not. The microlensing correction in all cases is 0 within 2 sigma. So, discussing the full sample, the hope was that we could do some statistics on this, and it is of course very low number statistics, so whatever results we have are not going to be very robust, but hopefully give us an indication of where we want to take this. First, here I show you the correlation between the A of V for the different extinction laws. This is having the intrinsic ratio free. And this is when you are able to constrain the intrinsic ratio. And obviously, the correlation is much better when the intrinsic ratio is fixed. We find a mean A of V of 0.54 when we take the values from the galactic type extinction for each of the systems. This mean value is perhaps slightly biased by the very strong 2.4, but if I remove that, the mean A of V is still around 0.33 or 32. so it's still significant extinction. We see no correlation between A and R of V, and this is a good thing because it means that the bias, that the effective RV should be as likely to go up and down when you take the effective RV. However, even if there is likely to go up and down, they're actually not equally likely to go as far. So there is still a bias when you take a large sample. But this is interesting because we are wondering what happens in a large sample. We also see strong anti-correlation between RV and alpha, and that is to be expected. If we didn't see this, we would worry about our fitting methods. It's nice, though, to note that the black line here, which is the best linear fit through the data points, that the point corresponding to the small Magellanic cloud, which is at alpha equal to 1 and RV equal to 2.9, falls precisely on this line. So, although individual systems can show strong preference for one type of extinction or the other, then in the whole sample, we do not see any preference. The plot here shows the chi-squared for the three types of extinction fits with a free intrinsic ratio for each of the systems, and they're listed here in terms of their redshift. So there's no obvious highest dot or lowest dot. This is a very busy plot, so let me start by explaining some of the notation. The boxes correspond to early type galaxies in our sample. The triangles are late type galaxies, and the filled symbols correspond to our golden sample, which was defined in such a way as being the most strongly extinguished pair for each system. So you see in this plot here, the filled box should always be the highest box if we have multiple lines of sight for each system. The only system that doesn't have a filled box is QO142, and that is because we are not quite confident that we were not able to separate the Lensing galaxy from the flux of the quasars, and we believe that it is strong enough to be affecting the results. So we just decided to be on the safe side to remove it from the golden sample. The mean RV we find is 2.8 for both the full sample and the golden sample, and it's slightly lower than the mean of the galaxy, but it's still consistent with it. So, where do we want to take this? We believe that the method is ideal for studying dust extinction of high redshift galaxies, and that it can complement various astrophysical and cosmological surveys where you need to correct for dust extinction. For instance, in supernovae type 1a studies. We also believe that gravitationally lensed quasars are ideal for studying possible behavior with redshift. And I actually should have told you that here, that this is the behavior of the parameters with redshift, and we say that we don't see any strong correlation here. So Östman claimed that they found a possible decrease in RV with redshift. We don't really see that, but again, we do not claim that it isn't there, but we have very low number statistics here, so we basically can neither confirm their claim nor refute it. As for the gamma ray burst people saying that AV drops with redshift, I can also not see that from my sample at all. So basically, in order to make statistically robust claims, we need a larger sample. We, however, believe that we have shown that this is quite doable. Like, the results we're getting are good enough so that you can start doing statistical analysis, provided the sample size is large enough. So what do we need? We need higher resolution. So that basically means we need to go to space. And also the effects of extinction along both lines of sight will be reduced for a large sample. So the mean value of a large sample should not be too much affected by this thing, although individual systems can still be quite strongly affected. We want multiband observations in the optical and the infrared, and ideally we want to probe the bump as well. I also hope that I've convinced you that it's very useful for us to be able to constrain the intrinsic ratio, so a simultaneous radio survey would be very useful. And there is some notion, Eric Linder visited DARC recently, and he is interested in seeing whether we can use SNAP to actually do such a space-based survey for gravitational lens quasars. And I'm going up in a few weeks to talk to him further about that. So maybe, maybe not. But at least I hope that at some point we will do a larger survey going to space. So thank you very much. Yes?
If I understand correctly, the pilot study really shows the potential. The limitation comes from microlensing, time delay, and the sample size, apart from other things.
Yes.
It seems the way to do these three things is to look at instead of quasar lenses, to go for galaxy lenses. Galaxy sources. In other words,
so looking at galaxy,
for the
galaxy lenses.
Yes. Where time delay, microlensing is not a problem.
Yes.
Looking at Einstein rings, for example.
We have discussed this. We haven't made any proposal for a future survey, but we have been discussing what might be the best way to go forward. And it's not obvious that it would be the quasars. It might be better to use, for instance, SNAP data, which might find many galaxy lenses and use them. It is quite possible. We have not actually done all the calculations or looked into it in detail, but yes, I agree with you. It is quite possible that you could improve it by doing that instead.
There, you also the sample size will greatly increase for people not other things.
Yeah.
But the challenge is whether the galaxies themselves have features that causes some extra. I mean, it'd be nice if it was just a smooth featureless.
But the problem might be that the galaxy would not be as much of a standard candle. Each of the images might not be as much of a standard candle because they are more extended. So where are you going to cut off?
Average light. It's an average light guided by lens models. You can say which is the counterpart of two images, which region should have. So this is should choose, for example, both the disk region of the two images. Anyway, that's
I was actually going to raise another question, but I think that what I can find with your SLACS survey is a lot of these lens galaxies are blue star forming. When you worry that you have extinction, maybe significant extinction in the lens object as well as extinction due to passing through the lens and galaxy, it might be spatially resolved or something by the lensing. Would that be a problem?
If it's not a problem for the quasar, obviously. For a galaxy, I'm not sure. As I say, I have not done such a calculation, so I don't know what the big systematics would be if you were looking at galaxy lensing rather than quasar lensing.
But still get two or four images of the same thing.
Yes. Maybe just for those who specify that. In this case, you're measuring a different quantity. So, this is obvious, interrupt me, but so if you're looking at a point source, you're measuring the extinction on the slender side. If you're looking at an extended source, you're looking at a spatial average of it. And so this is classic of patchy, dusty regions. Imagine you have a pattern of bricks with holes. If you measure along the line of sight, you measure either very high AB or zero AB. if you average over a background galaxy, you find great extinction because the parts that are completely extinct just drop off your light. And you only measure the parts that are not extinct. So you measure less light with the same colors. So you're just measuring two different quantities. If you use a background source, or it's a point source, or an extended source. And the extended source may be useful if you want to know what's the effect on background galaxy. But if you want to know background supernovae or GRBs, you need to know the point source extinction.
So I might have missed it earlier. How many of your sample were radio selective lenses and how many optical?
So they weren't selected as radio selected or radio or optical.
Right.
It basically took every lens that
we knew.
You know
what I'm going to ask now. Right?
Sorry?
You know what I'm going to ask next. So I think there might be a huge selection effect.
Yes, there might be.
If they're optically selected, you're going to miss all the ones with high AB because you have a look and you think, ah, it's not a lens.
Yes.
Because the other images...
But I know that's true, but however, we actually find reasonably high extinction, so I'm not sure if we are too affected by this, but there is definitely a selection effect. And if you're going to go to a larger sample and make statistical claims, then we would have to worry very much about how we choose our sample.
Can you show your sample again?
Yes.
And I had sort of my first question was you showed us the correlations where you fixed the flux ratios. And I was wondering how you did that for the ones that weren't radio loud.
Sorry?
So you showed these correlations between properties, and you say, here's a correlation that I'd let the flux ratio be free, and
yes.
Here's if I fix that sound. Value. How did you do that?
Right. What you would have noticed is that the graphs that had the intrinsic ratio fixed had a much fewer data points, and that's simply because some of the lenses I could not do this with. So with the lenses where I have only the radio lenses have fixed intrinsic ratio, like the other, we don't try to assign some fixed intrinsic ratio because it would be completely ad hoc. So. I can show you the graph again, so you can see the difference in the number of points.
But the regulator needs to be taken at the same time as the optical or not?
We would prefer that, because they, even if they're not affected by extinction, they can be affected by microlenses.
Right.
Is that not correct? So, you see, for instance, a very obvious case here. These two, I guess, only become one here. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 systems here. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Well, more than 10.
So still, if I looked at your initial sample, it looked like 5 of them are radio loud.
Yes.
So how do you fix the flux ratio for the other 3, I guess, for...
There's 8 points, but they are not all from different lenses.
Okay.
They might be different lengths of sight for a given lens. And they're only for the ones where we actually did extinction. For instance, I never tried to calculate the A2 minus A1 extinction curve that we know is affected by extinction along both lines of sight for MG0414. It's not included in this.
You showed one slide at the end with the extinction coefficients as a function of lens redshift.
Yes.
Is this figure telling us as well that the dust properties of spirals and ellipticals are indistinguishable?
Yes and no. Some people, I showed this to various of my colleagues, basically saying, these are my plots, do you see anything? So I wasn't trying to meet them, just tell me what you see. Some people claim to see a trend here for the late types using 3 data points. Some people claim to see that the boxes are somewhat higher than the triangles. I do discuss this in the paper that we wrote, and my claim is that we don't see any difference. But again, we have so few... the sample itself is small, so if you start dividing into sub-samples, you're getting even smaller things. So I would not feel confident making any claims about that we see that they're the same or that we see they're different. We don't see any obvious, except maybe if you really want to believe this.
I'm not sure astronomers would all consider a sample of 10 to be small.
I was at the statistics school at Penn State for astronomers, and there I think a lot of people consider the sample of 4 to be large, and it made me feel a bit more confident about this, because I at least had 10 systems. The neutrino, yeah, they have a... Right.
What's the status of the theoretical understanding of these extinction curves?
I mean, you said that that bump... It's
not well understood at all. I think that is the... I mean, all these laws are empirical. The reason for the graphite bump is not well understood at all. It's said to be due to graphite because that is the best explanation that people have come up with, but it's by no means an established, accepted answer. So,
could you imagine a time when you could do sort of chemistry of that this way?
As I said, the interest in measuring extinction curve for more distant galaxies is also to try to get information about the dust properties. But I think that my curves are still at the stage where they are not nearly detailed enough to be of any impact for the dust community itself. It's more for the astrophysical community wanting to do corrections. But maybe, yes, in the future, if we get much better at this, it could help them understand the dust itself.
You determined the extinction of the lens galaxies and, in a sense, ignored the host galaxy part. At the conclusion, you said that this is very important for the supernova type 1A, which I guess everyone agrees. However, there, we don't expect a major galaxy along the line of sight. There, we would either consider the host galaxy or some intergalactic dust to contribute most. So how relevant is this study then for this supernova?
Well, the study is relevant in the sense that it will give you the properties, the average properties that you would expect to see in these more distant galaxies, including the galaxies of supernovae hosts, unless they are systematically different. There is, of course, like the division of the sample for lenses, which favor early type galaxies, is different to that of supernovae, which favor early type galaxies. But you should be able to study, as I say, the extinction effects for higher redshift galaxies. However, you would not be able to use this method to say that this is the extinction you should see in supernovae, because it's not yet well established whether the supernova itself is affecting the interstellar medium to the extent where it's no longer following typical extinction curves. But at the status they are today, they are assuming, most of them, in most analyses, that it is the interstellar medium and not the circumstellar dust that's affecting the extinction. So for that assumption, this is highly relevant. If, however, it is the circumstellar medium, then this has very little influence on that.
Asterisk. I have a tangentially related question. There was a claim some little while ago, a month ago, claiming that the star formation, I guess, in the universe was actually more some driver saying that we have underestimated the amount of stars in the universe, that most of the stars in bulges which are hidden by dust, etc., etc. So there's a factor of 3 maybe of extra star are actually just being extinct. But looking at these diagrams, can you actually say that is it possible that these relatively high redshift disky systems or ellipticals could have had a lot of dust, that unexpectedly large amount of dust?
Wasn't this bias at higher redshifts than what we're probing for the star formation rate? Weren't they talking about higher redshifts? galaxies?
Then change the infrared properties.
Who are we talking about?
Driver, NCT, NCT survey.
So
what? Weird. So he was claiming that
star formation, most of them are
bulges in the open universe can be extincted by as much as like 2 nanometers.
Yeah. So could it be possible, looking at these diagrams?
Zero.
Well,
they are talking about local galaxies. There's edge-on galaxies, so that you have the dust lane just block the light from the bulge. I'm not sure whether that's
that's very different from what I have here.
I'm not sure you're talking about this or talking about.
I think that's what mostly Simon sees, but these are mostly bulge-dominated systems, so.
Even for the late type, some of them are bulge.
And she finds very good dust, like 0.1, 0.2.
And in your one outlier there is the as a late type galaxy, is that correct?
Yes, it's the triangles are late type, so it's the 1152. But it's not quite true that this is very low extinction. It's very low compared to this factor of 2 that you're talking about. But for the supernova community, this is actually quite strong enough to be of significant importance if they're using the wrong extinction or the correct one.
Good to stop, so let's think.